Hi, I'm Kristen Bell. And if you know my husband, Dax, then you also know he loves shopping for a car. Selling a car? Not so much.
We're really doing this, huh?
Thankfully, Carvana makes it easy. Answer a few questions, put in your VIN or license, and done. We sold ours in minutes this morning, and they'll come pick it up and pay us this afternoon.
Bye-bye, Truckee.
Of course, we kept the favorite.
Hello, other Truckee.
Sell your car with Carvana today. Terms and conditions apply.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Good evening and welcome to Monsters Among Us. I am your guide, Derek Hayes. Greetings. Welcome. Hello and howdy. I'm tickled pink to have you here with us this evening. And we have a lot of new listeners as of late, so I just want to take a moment to warn them about what they're getting themselves into. The calls I play on this program are collected via my toll-free hotline, and they come from everyday listeners, just like yourself. Assuming you meet the confines of those parameters. Now, each of these calls covers a subject that falls under the paranormal umbrella. And most importantly, to the best of my knowledge, they're all 100% true. So be it a call about an upright, unknown ape in the Pacific Northwest, an alien visitation in a farmhouse bedroom, or like in Andrew's story, a pale white creature in a darkened New England forest.
Hi, Derek. This is Andrew calling from Connecticut, calling to discuss my strange experience. Now, I've called in previously with a hometown legend in regards to the Moodus sounds, and it was pretty surreal to hear my submission played on an MAU episode, so thank you very much. Back to my experience, though, I'm not really sure what to make of it, and I'd love to get your take. This was around the summer of 2006 or 2007, and I was on summer break in college. I was living with my parents at the time, and I had invited a friend over to hang out for the night. As for a little background, my parents' place is located in like your average suburban small town, you know, moderately wooded location, pretty boring actually. So my friend shows up at around 10:30 at night and he parks in his usual spot at the end of my parents' driveway. At this point, it's, you know, pitch black and on a quiet road, so not a lot of traffic. You know, so I go out to meet him without a flashlight. Big mistake. So my parents have this long, gradually sloping driveway, and it's, you know, like 200 feet long or something like that. Anyway, I'm about halfway down the driveway when I hear a rustling opposite side of the yard, about 100 feet to my right. I thought it was my friend trying to scare me, and, you know, I laugh and say, "Hey, is that you over there? I can hear you." And to my surprise, I hear him say, "Dude, is that you?" from about 15 feet in front of me. So, like, all the hair stood up on the back of my neck. And then I hear this thing, whatever it is, burst from the bushes and run right towards us. Bewildered, my friend and I are like, "What the hell is going on?" And when something crosses right between us, it crashed through the woods to our left, and then it disappeared. Everything happened in the matter of a few seconds. It was so quick. I remember going inside and, you know, my friend and I are frantically speaking to my parents, explaining that we saw something weird, and we went back outside and we could never find it. Whatever it was, though, whatever I saw was tall and upright. At least I thought it was. My friend, who was actually closer, he said it was tall and white. At this time, he cleverly named it Q-tip. And, you know, it stuck with us, like, ever since. We're like, that's what it is. So a week or so passes, and then we get together with another friend of ours who lived about 5 houses down from where I lived at the time. We're telling him this story, and his little brother, you know, he pops up and he's like, "Hey man, I was outside around that same time smoking a cigarette, and I saw my neighbor's floodlight turn on, and then I saw something move from one side of the property to the other, and it freaked him out. He snubbed out his cigarette and went inside." I thought that was interesting, you know. Other than that, we had never heard anything about it or seen anything about whatever that might have been. Now, I've listened to, like, every single episode you've put out, and when I heard Season 9, Episode 5, at around the 37-minute mark, I got goosebumps because it sounded exactly what my friend and I might have seen. Rationally, do I think it's, like, an unknown cryptid of some kind? I don't know. I mean, doubtful. Looking back, you know, my friends think that maybe we saw just the tail end of a deer, you know, passing between us. I'm not so sure, though. I mean, what creeps me out is it was upright and on two legs. I mean, even if it was a person, why would they be hiding in my front yard in the middle of the night? You know, we're waiting for us. I don't know. Strange. But anyway, thanks again. I mean, I really look forward to the podcast every week, and it's really my absolute favorite. And, you know, I can't wait to hear the next episode. So thank you very much. You guys have a good one.
Thank you, Andrew. The Q-tip. That's an interesting moniker. And perhaps a name descriptive enough to hint at a natural explanation. An explanation that Andrew himself even hinted at. You see, that area of the country is home to one of North America's most resilient mammals. 110,000 of them, in Connecticut alone, in fact. The white-tailed deer. So named because of its bright white tail. And they use this white tail for many different things. As a signal to the young for them to follow. As a communication tool to the rest of the herd. Or as a self-defense mechanism. As they are bounding through the forest. Experts in the field call it flagging, and it essentially means that these deer raise their bright white tail as high as they can as they run away or run past any unwanted visitor. Then, once the animal is a good ways away, out of the grasp of danger, they lower their tail, then essentially just disappear into the forest. The rest of their coat is a pretty effective piece of camouflage. Now, I've attached a few samples in the show notes if you want to see flagging in action. And I almost forgot the most important part. The tail is sort of Q-tip shaped, believe it or not. And in the woods at night, and while being startled, I could see how a deer's tail could be misidentified as some sort of strange white creature. Again, especially at night. But I know you didn't come here to hear me talk about white-tailed deer. You came here to hear me talk about monsters, creatures, and other things that go bump in the night. And it just so happens that this area is known for those kinds of things as well. Now, I don't know Andrew's exact location, but I wonder if he's anywhere near Downs Road, which is located in Hampton, Connecticut. And it's a haunted stretch of derelict road that is infamously known for strange activity.
For 15 years, Maria Case has watched as brave souls venture beyond the gate, she herself opting to play it safe.
As you're walking, you can kind of feel the eeriness.
Downs Road used to connect Hampton to Bethany. It was closed to through traffic about 9 months after Maria moved in. Our walk down the once paved road finds old foundations and signs of life that is no longer here. Another nearby resident, Mia Bonadies, is so fascinated by the area, she researched it for a college paper. She says the area was once home to Native Americans and farmers, some of whom were banished into the woods. Many believe they're still there.
We went all the way down about maybe a half mile back into the road, And there was just a light just sitting just right in the middle of the path. So we turned our flashlights on and off quickly, and the light just darted like 100 miles per hour back into the woods.
The haunted stories include reports of apparitions of children and other ghosts, cars breaking down and being clawed at by creatures, and hikers being chased out of the woods. One legend is there is a Downs monster that roams the area.
When I hear the screams, I hear them more into the woods.
Now that clip comes to us from WTNH, News 8 out of New Haven, Connecticut. And you heard that right. The Downs Road Monster. It's said to be upright and human-sized and shaped, white as a sheet, and get this, it has reportedly been seen rushing through the forest at top speed, almost exactly like what Andrew reported. Now, it's worth noting that there's also a legend about a white or albino horse in the area as well. So it seems to me that the waters surrounding this story have been muddied just a bit. But the Downs Road Monster is still widely known in the area to be just that, a monster. So if we guessed correctly, Andrew, and we are in fact near your location, maybe give the Downs Road legend a once-over. I'm not sure it'll answer any questions you have, but I bet it'll certainly raise a few new ones. Thank you again, Andrew, for calling in.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Now, if you will, join me in welcoming tonight's next guest, Mark in Idaho. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Derek. First-time caller, new listener. This is Mark calling from North Idaho. The story I got takes place actually in the winter of 91 or 92 in a little town called Big Lake, Alaska. Well, friends of mine lived out there, Gordon and Linda, and they had a neat little A-frame house. Gordon's dad worked in the gold mine at Cantwell as a boiler operator, and he was gone a lot, so Gordon and his girlfriend stayed there most of the time by themselves. And one day I got a call from Gordon, and he said, "Mark, you got to come out here." And I said, "Why? What's going on?" He says, "Well, some strange things have been happening. I got a lot to tell you. Just come on out. The heat's been out for 2 days, though, so dress warm." And I said, "Well, I don't want to come out there if the, you know, heat's been out for 2 days." And he said, "No, I've got to tell you some stuff." So I said, "All right, I'll be out there." So I got dressed warm. It was winter in Alaska, so naturally I was dressed for the occasion. I showed up out there, and Gordon proceeded to tell me that, "So this A-frame has a kitchen upstairs, a bathroom, and one room upstairs, one room downstairs, and then the main family room is downstairs. So Linda was up in the bathroom taking a shower, and they had this window in the bathroom. Since they moved in, this was an older house, probably 50 years old at the time. They were never able to get that window open. And one day while she was in the shower, just a few days prior to this, the window flew open. She heard it slam up as it lifted up, and she peeked around the shower curtain, and there was nobody in the bathroom. And so she toweled off and dried off, got some clothes on, went outside to see if somebody had forced it open from outside, and there was no footprints in the snow out there. So they couldn't figure out how this window had just opened on its own. And Gordon was telling me that, and Linda was co-signing it, and we were just sitting there talking about that. And he said, and the other thing is, the furnace keeps kicking on. It's been off. We've been out of propane for 2 days. And just then, as we were talking about it, the furnace kicked on. He said, see, that's what I'm telling you. The furnace is kicking on all by itself. And he said, come here. And he got me up and walked me over to the wall where the switch was. And he said, see, it's off. And he turned it on and off, and it turned back off. And he said, it's, I don't know, some weird things are happening here. And Linda doesn't want to stay here. And anyways, we're just kind of talking about this. And I said, yeah, that's really odd. The furnace is kicking on. And I don't know what to say about the window. We heard a crash upstairs. Well, Gordon had a dog, a great big Rottweiler, really well-trained, kind of aggressive dog. And it ran straight upstairs. And we followed it up the stairs into the kitchen. And he had a pull-down ladder that went into the attic. And so the trap door was pulled down and the ladder was pulled down. And the rope on the trap door part of it was still swinging. And he says, Mark, go up there. And I said, I'm not going up there. He says, Linda, go up there and see who's up there. She said, no way. And as we were standing there discussing it, all the dog was doing was standing there barking. And then he would growl and then he would bark. And then he quieted down as we were standing there talking about it. And then over my shoulder, we could hear the front door. And the front of the house was all glass. It was a glass door. And we heard the deadbolt unlock and the door swung open. And the dog ran over there and barked, but he wouldn't go outside. And then he kind of whimpered and backed away from the door. And I don't know, we were all just standing there in amazement. We didn't see anything. We didn't see the ghost, assuming it was a ghost. And I don't know, it was kind of a spooky experience. Although we didn't see a ghost, but it was there. We didn't witness it, but it was there. And Linda wouldn't stay in the house for like a week. She went back to her mom's, who she didn't get along with. She wouldn't stay out there. And the dog's behavior was strange, to say the least. So, anyway, Mark from North Idaho. Derek, you're doing a great job. Love the show. Hope you can use this. Keep it spooky. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. Now, Alaska has so much going for it naturally that I often forget about the ghosts and hauntings of the state. Because truth be told, I don't know a lot about Alaska. I've never made it up that far. So out of curiosity, I looked up a list of the top haunted establishments in the last frontier. And here is what hauntedrooms.com ranked the top 9. Baggage Tower. It's the one where the entire town is located in one huge apartment-style building. It's creepy without the ghosts. To no one's surprise, Fairbanks Memorial Hospital is said to be infested with ghosts. The old Jesse Lee Home for Children in Seward. The Igloo City Hotel in Cantwell. The Wendy Williamson Auditorium at the University of Alaska. Another that should come as no surprise. The Nightmute High School in Nightmute, Alaska. Even the name is kind of creepy on that one. And Bedarka Road in Chugiak is said to be haunted by a father and daughter, victims of a tragic accident and a broken heart. Also, the Red Onion Saloon in Skagway. And lastly, Eldred Rock Lighthouse and Lynn Canal. Now you can read the background of each of these locations by following the link in tonight's show notes, or in the show's description. And if you find yourself in Alaska, and you recognize any of these locations, go give them a visit and report back to us. If years of reality television has taught me anything, it's to expect anything coming out of the country's largest state to be absolutely wild. So thank you for sharing a prime example, Mark. We appreciate you calling in. Now, if you're sitting there asking yourself, how can I get my story on this fine program? The answer is simple. Call our toll-free, 24-hour, 7-day-a-week hotline at 888-608-NIGHT. That's 888-608-NIGHT. Or email me a voice memo at monstersamonguspodcast@gmail.com. Remember to call from a quiet place. It's not moving 65 miles an hour. Finish your story before you hang up, even if you have to call back in a second time. And please, only one story per call. You can send in several stories, just not all in the same call. That makes it awful hard to add it around. Other than that, just keep those calls coming. And if you're sitting on a monster story, send those in. They're my favorite, and well, frankly, I just can't get enough. Now, folks, this next one comes to us anonymously from the streets of Bakersfield.
Hey, Derek. I've been listening to your podcast for probably a year now, and I just recently listened to the newest episode, season 16, episode 12. And when I was listening to it, someone was talking about a yellow light in the sky, and it just jogged my memory of a few weeks ago when I was driving home from my job at like 2 a.m. and when I was driving home, I was just looking at the road, and all of a sudden I see a like really bright yellow light just shoot across the sky. Like, it wasn't fast that I couldn't see it for so long, but I saw it enough to see it was kind of just like a ball of yellow light that just flew across the sky. And that person who sent the entry in the newest episode of episode 12 of season 16 just reminded me of that. Just sounded a lot like what I saw a few weeks ago. Thank you, and keep up the good work.
Thank you, caller. Now, to be frank here, it sort of sounded like a meteor shooting across the sky. They can be several different colors, shapes, and sizes, and travel from many different angles. In fact, since our caller could identify the color, assuming this was in fact a meteor, I would guess that the primary makeup of the object burning up in our atmosphere was sodium or iron, as those elements tend to glow a vibrant yellow or orange. I actually linked to a neat little illustration that'll help you keep track of what material causes each color as these objects crash into Earth. Magnesium glows a teal blue, calcium a bright purple, and nitrogen and oxygen a bright red hue. A handy guide to have with you if you're ever stargazing. Now, if what our caller witnessed was not some sort of meteor, I shudder to think what it might have been. And either way, we thank you, caller, for taking the time to report your sighting. You never know. Like you, another caller out there may now be inspired to report their very own light in the sky.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Now, this next one also comes to us from an anonymous caller, this time from parts unknown.
Hey, I've been listening to podcasts for about 4 or 5 months now, I think. I listen to it on the graveyard shifts. I work at my workplace. We do pallets and stuff. but I'm on my 30-minute break. About 3 a.m. right now. And I've been thinking on this for the last couple of weeks, whether I should call in or not, because I don't really know what this was. I live in Bakersfield, California. This is when I was a kid. My grandma and grandpa's house has always had stories told about it on their side of the family, say with my mom, my aunt, seeing little girls and just general weird paranormal things happening. Just creepy stuff. And when I was a kid, I used to sleep in my grandparents' bedroom in between them every now and then. Whenever I got scared of the dark or something, I was like probably 4 or 5. So it made sense, at least to me. So their bedroom is set up with the beds in the center and the doors to the far left corner, as if you're looking at straight towards the opposite wall of the bed. They had a dresser with a big mirror on it. And then in that far right corner, they had a television on one of those tall kind of stands you'd put the audio stacks in. And then they had the window. Just a big window, pretty much almost the entire wall, just about 2 or 3 feet up. Then they had their lamps and nightstands and stuff. But it was night, but it was still bright enough outside for light to come in through the window. I don't know if it was moonlight or early morning sunlight. Again, I was a little kid, and honestly don't even know if this really happened or not, but figured it might be worth trying to get some answers. I woke up and saw a man standing in the TV corner. Like, think of if someone were standing directly in front of the TV, but just like kind of leaning an arm against the wall. He had white skin, like pale white. He had a discernible face. Like, he just looked nondescript. He was wearing black and just like a black long sleeve coat or suit jacket, one of the two. And he had like brown to blackish eyes. Not like totally black. He had irises as far as I can remember. No, just normal nondescript looking guy. And I was scared by it. I could move. I could talk and everything. It wasn't like sleep paralysis. I remember dipping my head under the blankets after kind of tapping my grandma's shoulder. She didn't wake up or anything. Grandpa as well. He didn't wake up. When I hid under the blankets as a kid, I never put them completely over my head. I didn't really get the point of that. I would do it about up to my eyes, and then I would turn away because I didn't want to lose line of sight on whatever was scaring me, because at that point, you don't know what it's going to do. And that thought scared me more. So I probably stared off with this guy, or whatever it really was. In fact, the thought of it being an actual person and not anything else is more scary than anything else. But stared off with it for a while. I don't remember. I pretty much till I fell asleep. There was a point where I just squeezed my eyes shut and then woke up and, you know, went to sleep, woke up in the morning, and there was nothing there. Nothing was wrong. Just one of those weird things. I don't typically seek out weird things like that or have things happen to me, which thankfully.
Of course you should call something like this in, caller. A tall, pale man watching you sleep. Or try to, anyway. That's certainly creepy enough to be featured here on the program. But if it's answers you're looking for, outside of sleep paralysis, which the caller was able to dismiss, I have no idea what this could have been. Except, of course, maybe a ghost. And as far as the blanket protection protocol is concerned, I too was a user as a child. When I was pretty young, I would go completely under. But I would always end up sweating and overheating. My parents would give me a hard time because they thought for sure I would suffocate under there. Well, one day my dad suggested that I make a tunnel out of the blanket so I could still breathe. And boy, was that a life changer. I could keep my entire head hidden underneath, but only a corner of my mouth would poke out from beneath the blanket, just enough to bring in some fresh air. But in hindsight, I wasn't covered up enough to hide from anything, let alone a child-eating monster. But I'm here today, so apparently it got me by. Now, your story was unsettling, caller.
And around here, that sort of thing is rewarded. So great job. And thanks again for calling. Now, if you will, it's rendezvous in Texas, where Rolando is waiting to share his father's life-altering story.
Hey, Derek. Rolando calling. Love the show, man. Doing an awesome job. I'm a new listener. You know, keep up the good work, man. I have a story to tell you, man. It's about my dad when he was a young man, early 20s. He grew up in Gunnersville, Texas, back in the early 80s. He was not doing so good as a young adult. He was hanging around the wrong crowd and doing a couple things that he shouldn't have, and, you know, just on the wrong path of where his life is at now. His friends also weren't helping him all that well, his buddies that he was hanging out with. He ran into a couple things, but the story I want to share with you takes place where it was him and his buddy walking back from a bar. It was 3 a.m., and back in those times in Canotillo in the early 80s, once it hit 12 in the midnight, it's completely dark, man. There's very little street lights out, very low light anywhere. You get a good look up in the sky, you can see most of the stars and moon. It's pretty beautiful, but I'm guessing after what he saw, I don't think he thought that anymore. It was him and his buddy, and they were walking back from the bar. They had a little bit too much to drink, but my dad claims, and, you know, my dad, he's a straightforward kind of guy. He wouldn't lie about these kind of things. He said that this thing scared him sober straight, you know. His friend, his buddy, lives on 4th Street, and my dad lives on 3rd Street back in those days. And my dad was being a good friend and walking his friend back to his house. On the way over there, crossing 1st Street, coming out of the bar, they noticed a horse on its own crossing their path on a four-way. My dad didn't really get a good look at the horse. All he saw was just a horse on its own crossing their path. And he thought it was pretty weird, but he knows that there's a couple houses that own horses. So he just thought maybe some rancher probably lost his horse. But there was a sign on why he saw that horse. They kept joking on their way over there. And my dad finally got to his friend's street, dropped him off, said goodbye to him, actually walked him into his house and shut his door. Like I said, these times are a little bit more free. My dad's buddy had left his house open, and my dad walked him into the house and, you know, put his friend to bed and came out of the house and was on his way back. On his way out of his house, he turned around and he felt something to his left side of his shoulder. And he said that when he turned around at the corner of his friend's house, he saw that same horse, but this time it was carrying a carriage. And inside that carriage stepped out the Grim Reaper, man. Now, this Grim Reaper was a little bit different from maybe other Grim Reapers that you've probably had on your stories, man. But this one had a top hat and a very nice combed gentleman's mustache. But his clothes were all raggedy, like torn apart, like ancient looking clothes, man. Didn't make any sense. And he was pointing at his buddy's room. He was near the window, and the Grim Reaper was pointing at his buddy's room. My dad got so freaking scared. The horse like jumped up and kind of kicked the air and, you know, did that the horse noise that you normally make. And my dad booked it to his house. Didn't look back. Didn't even want to hear this thing was going to talk to him. He just wanted to get out of there. And he booked it to his house. I don't blame him, to be honest with you. Ran home and told himself, I'll call him in the morning. I'm not going to call him right now. There's no way I'm going to get a hold of him. Well, come next morning, man, he gets really upsetting news. He said that he noticed that there was a couple ambulances and fire trucks on the corner of his friend's street, and they were at his house, man. His friend passed away in the night, and my dad honestly that scared him so much, man. To know what he saw with how it looked, how it scared him. Man, it scared him so much that he stopped doing those bad things that he was doing in his youth. I personally think it affected him long term. Yes, he did drop the bad things that he was doing in his life as his, in his youth, but he did pick up a drinking habit after that, man. It scared him enough to set him on a path where he wasn't going to be doing those things anymore. So maybe it was a good thing. Maybe it wasn't, man. I don't know. But even when my dad was telling me that this story of his and how the Grim Reaper looked, you can tell the shakiness in his voice, man. And my dad's like an old school type of guy, blue collar mechanic kind of guy that, you know, doesn't get scared easily and, you know, brushes everything off like, oh, that's not real. That's not real. But when he told us that story to me and my brother, man, it really did affect him. And, you know, it changed him drastically. Thank you for hearing me out, man, and goodbye.
Thank you, Rolando. Well, that got pretty deep. The visions, the life-altering epiphany, and of course, the death of the father's friend. And I can't help but note the odd description for the Grim Reaper character. A top hat, ragged clothing, and a gentleman's mustache. It almost sounds like Tim Burton's rendition of the Bringer of Death. Now, it's all very interesting, Rolando. But I'm afraid I don't have much I can add to this heart-stopping story. But if you're listening and you have any insight or maybe something similar has happened to you, let's hear about it. It might help bring Rolando's father some closure to hear a similar story to his. Until then, however, thanks again, Rolando, for the phone call. Now, folks, real quick, don't forget to check out our film, Shadows in the Desert, High Strangeness in the Borrego Triangle. It can be found streaming in all sorts of different places, including Amazon and Apple TV. Just visit BorregoTriangle.com, BORREGO, for streaming destinations. And for you folks overseas, I'll have some news for you here very shortly. Now let's go ahead and sneak one more call in before our next commercial break. And this one is one of the stranger calls I've received to date. It takes a certain phobia to another level. Justin from Illinois, welcome to the show.
Hey, man, I just started listening to your podcast, and it's awesome. But I figured, you know, I didn't realize you guys had a hotline to call in, so I figured I would share my story with you since my entire life no one's really believed me on it. This had to have dated back in 2002. It was a summer night. I was just heading back from my girlfriend's house, and it was probably about, oh, I don't know, maybe 1:32 in the morning. I, at that time, had a curfew, and I didn't want to be late, but I had overslept because I fell asleep at her house. And so this took place in Deerfield, Illinois. And I'm driving down Deer Path Road, which typically I've done 1,000 times my entire life. I'm driving down the road, and all of a sudden I start seeing these cars that are lined up on the side of the road, and I wasn't thinking much of it as a stupid high schooler at the time. And as I look to my left, and I swear to this day I cannot describe what this could have been, there was a old, kind of, I don't want to say an abandoned warehouse, but it was just a warehouse where typically they leave like truck trailers. And so as I look to my left, there is this mechanical spider-like machine that is on the side of the building. And there are people with their phones out. And as a high schooler, I'm kind of nervous. I don't even want to pull over to the side. And I couldn't even look at it. It was emanating a white light. And it was almost as if it was climbing up the side of the building. At that point, I kind of booked it home. And I never said a word to my parents. I never said a word to really anybody until a few years later when I started to share that story with other friends. And the creepy part about it was that there was another person that night in our area that didn't see the exact object, but they said there was such a light that was glowing in the night that it was almost hard for her to sleep through her window. So I don't know what it was. Do I believe in UFOs? Maybe. I can't say for sure what it might have been, but it was so scary that I couldn't pull over to the side of the road. I didn't want to know what it was, and I just kept going, man. I booked it. So, but that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. And this is Justin from Illinois. Awesome, man.
Thank you, Justin. You know, I swear this is the plot to a Tom Selleck movie that I watched back in the 80s. Well, you know, both Delaney and I did some digging on this story, and we didn't find much of anything. Now, I assumed, since so many people were taking photos when Justin drove by, that you'd think that one or two would have made it onto the internet. You know, maybe they did, and we simply couldn't find them. So outside of an art installment, or some sort of promotional thing for an upcoming Spider-Man film, I'm not sure what this could have been. But I'm excited to share the report with you, Justin, in hopes that someone out there listening may be in possession of one of these photos. Until it shows up, thanks again for giving me a call.
Proceso de contratación. Roll at any time.
It's another exclusive offer.
And all programs.
En el Pico Rivera Sports.
Now this next story comes to us from across the globe. Masaid, welcome to the program.
Hey Derek, my name is Masaid. I'm born in a country called Kuwait. After the Gulf War, I moved to a country called Oman. If you never heard of it, I don't blame you. It's not in the news much. It's like 4 hours away from Dubai, in UAE. So we moved there when I was 6 years old. I had a sister who was 5 or 4 and a half then. She's a year younger than me, or a year and a half. So my dad used to own a used car dealership. So he got to know the locals there pretty fast, just dealing with them on a daily basis. And this one local who became friends with my dad invited him to a party. So in the Middle East, a party usually means a birthday party. So my dad accepted the invitation. He's like thinking, you know, he will take his two kids who are 4 and a half or 5 and 6 years old to this party where they get to see the culture and how they did birthday parties in Oman, in Muscat, Oman. Oman is well known for its black magic. Even like my family in Kuwait would make fun of us and be like, why don't you get on your broom and fly over to Kuwait to visit, stuff like that. So on the way to this party, my dad, the whole way, I remember like it was yesterday, that he kept saying, oh, I didn't ask him if it was a boy or girl, the kid's birthday, or how old is he, like what should I get him and all that stuff, or get her. And then he decided just to take an envelope and put some money in it and write happy birthday. And we get to this party, and right away they separate the kids from the men, which is like normal in the Middle East. Either you could stay with your dad as kids, or you go with the woman. And at this party, they're like, yeah, come with the other kids, meet the other kids kind of thing. So my dad's like, okay, yeah, go with the other kids. And they take the kids to the roof of the house, which is like, in the Middle East, the roofs are flat. They're not like here in North America. So you could walk on them. So as soon as we got into the courtyard, away from our dad, we saw mayhem. We saw men chanting, yelling, men just running in headfirst into a brick wall. I could remember it like it was yesterday. They were walking straight into the brick wall. And they took us into a little room where these like kids, I'm telling you, they were like 9 or 10 years old. This little girl, I could not forget her face. She was like just yelling, get it out of me, get it out of me, in this man's voice. And it was so scary. So they take us on top of the roof. I could see down into the courtyard, and I see this thing that these men are like, just like ripping their clothes. They're running into walls. They're screaming, they're chanting, they're saying du'as, they're saying verses from the Quran. And I was scared, but I was trying to hold it together for my little sister, who was like just crying. She was asking me, what's going on? What's going on? And I, as a kid, I did not know, but I knew that I have to be strong for my little sister. And all of a sudden, I see my dad running into the courtyard, and he's like, just like a crazy person, just yelling for me and my sister, where are you? Where are you? So we right away ran downstairs again, went to the courtyard, and my dad just tracked us out. This was like 5 minutes in. Like, it was right away he realized what's going on, that it was an exorcism party, not a birthday party. And yeah, like, as he was leaving, his friend saw him leaving, and he's like, why are you leaving? And he's like, this is not the party I thought it would be. This is something very different. And his friend just started laughing. He sees his friend like even like 30 years ago. I remember a couple years ago, he saw him again, and the guys just like brought it up as this funny thing. It's like, oh, he didn't even last 5 minutes at the party. And my dad's like, no, that's not my kind of party. We're not used to that. And that's my story. I could kind of explain what was going on in that party as a medical student now. But back then, I was freaked out. I thought they were all possessed. The scene was unreal. I there was no way I could ever forget the scene I saw. And it was packed. There was so many people in there. Anyways, love the show. I listen to it every day, catching up to all the old episodes. Love it. Keep it up. Have a great one.
Thank you, Miss Aid. You know, I could not imagine what I'd do if I found myself in this situation. I'm surrounded by weirdness so much these days that I guess I'd probably find it fascinating, yet highly uncomfortable. But perhaps not uncomfortable enough that I'd feel the need to leave. It's the sort of thing where you fade yourself into the back of the room, close to the exit, with one eye on the door and the other on the unreal scene unfolding before you. After all, when would you ever get another opportunity to see a mass exorcism? I sure don't get invited to them often. But imagine being a kid and being thrust into one of these social engagements, unaware of what is actually taking place there, and to be an older sibling helping a younger sibling through this chaotic scene. I just couldn't imagine. Now, as a non-religious person myself, I don't really have much I can add to this story, other than to say I'm happy that he shared it here with us. A real quote-unquote exorcism or not, I can't imagine it was a fun experience. But at the very least, I can confirm that it now makes for a great story. So thank you again, Miss Aid, for sharing it. Now I'm going to keep this brief, but I don't want you to forget all about our merchandise shop and that brand new t-shirt design by Jonathan Dodd. Visit monstersamonguspodcast.com and click the shop tab. We're starting to run out of some sizes, but Sarah assures me that the restocking order has been made, and Nick at Streetlight Printing in Bellbrook, Ohio, is on the case. Once those shirts arrive, I'll be sure to let everyone know. In the meantime, there are plenty of other items available. Go take a look for yourself at monstersamonguspodcast.com. Now, folks, for the last story of the evening. And this one touches on a subject that got me into all this weirdness to begin with. From the state of North Carolina, please join me in welcoming David to the platform.
Hi, Derek. This is David Clark. I am in North Carolina. I'm catching up on an episode, so I'm only on season 7, episode 16, and I heard Emily's call in about the black cats in North Carolina, and I can't say it was a black cat. I would like to say this is about 9 or 10 years ago, and I was on my way from Lenoir, North Carolina, back to my home in Catawba, traveling on I-40 East, and I was just going down the highway, and there were several police cruisers, an ambulance, and a tow truck sitting alongside the highway. After I got off of I-40 onto 321, heading towards Lincolnton area, and all I could really see, and I can't be 100% certain about this, was there was a tarp covering something on the side of the highway at 65 miles an hour, and I saw huge paws with claws. That was it. I couldn't see a shape. I didn't see what kind of animal it was, but in my mind, that was like a lion, or, I mean, I'm thinking even larger than any kind of cats that we actually have in North Carolina. Like, the paws were huge. They were huger than my own hands and then the claws. But again, that was the only thing that I could see. And I checked the news. I went over the internet. There was nothing reported about this. And that just kind of made me disregard it. But at the same time, I know what I saw, even though I can't say what I saw, if that makes any sense. It's confusing, but it was a very, very large animal that was covered by this tarp. The paws were huge. The claws that you could see were huge. And it was not black. It was just something unexplainable. I don't know what it was. There's never been any explanation. Nothing has ever come about on the internet. Like I said, I would like to say this is about 10 years ago. It was probably between April and July because the weather was warm and I actually had my windows down. And if anybody else has seen anything or knows anything about this, I'd be very interested to try and figure out what it was, because again, I don't have any idea. I only know what I saw. And I can't 100% collaborate what I saw, because it could have just been passing at 70 miles an hour. I saw what I wanted to see. But if any of the listeners out there in the North Carolina area around Hickory, Viewmont, you know, if anybody else has seen something like this and could collaborate with me, it would be greatly appreciated. And if not, I will just keep this in my heart as a deep mystery that I would like to believe was maybe an escaped animal from a circus. I don't know, but I think about it now and it's insane, because something like that should not be in this area. Thank you very much for the podcast. I love it. I hope it keeps going, gets me through work and my drives too. Have a great evening.
Thank you, David. Well, now there's a story I can sink my teeth into. Well, let's start with, if this were some sort of escaped refuge animal or a released pet, it wouldn't be the first time something like that has happened. In fact, it wouldn't even be the first time something like that has happened in the state of North Carolina.
Raja, one of the best-known tigers at a North Carolina sanctuary, has died 16 years after his rescue made national headlines. In 2005, Raja was found wandering on the side of a road outside Charlotte with a 6-month-old tiger cub by his side. In the years that followed, he became a favorite and, for many, the face of Carolina Tiger Rescue in Chatham County. Raja died February 13 after he was diagnosed with hemangioscaroma, a cancer of the cells that produce blood vessels.
R.I.P. Raja. So if it happened once, I think it's safe to assume that it can happen again. Because it actually did. With a lion this time. And with more tragic results.
Just reminds us once again how vulnerable we are.
A plot of woods is all that separates Caroline Lauer's house from the private wildlife park next door. She says 8 years ago, one of the lions at the Conservator Center came way too close for comfort. It got loose and was in her yard.
And at the time, I had two foster children, two kids staying with us, and we were scared to death because the footprints were in our yard. We ran the community watch. And so we found out, we asked around, and we found out that two people had said they had seen a lion get out.
While Caroline says no one was hurt, what happened then is frighteningly similar to the attack that killed 22-year-old wildlife intern Alexandra Black on Sunday. Matai the lion somehow escaping his locked enclosure, wandering into a staff area at the Conservator Center and mauling Black to death. Caswell County Sheriff's deputies shooting and killing the lion after tranquilizers failed to put the lion down.
Now those clips courtesy of the News and Observer and WTVD. ABC News 11 out of Raleigh, respectively. Now, an escaped animal could easily explain what David saw, but neither of these two big cat stories went under the radar, so to speak. Both were covered on local news outlets. Hardly a cover-up, if you get what I'm saying. So let's assume that's not what he saw that day, that the creature wasn't some known animal in the wrong area. Now, normally, our other options would be pretty limited. But not when we're talking beastly big cats in the state of North Carolina. There is a long lineage that would suggest that these things have been there for a very long time. In the early days of the state, locals would tell of the Wampus Cat, a puma-like creature with six legs and a ferocious scream. In the 1960s, in Forsyth County, the infamous Vienna Beast terrorized a small town. And of course, in the early 50s, it was another feline foe that petrified the Tar Heel State. The infamous Beast of Bladenboro.
On the southeastern edge of the North Carolina Piedmont lies the small town of Bladenboro. Incorporated in 1903, Bladenboro is a snapshot of small-town America. In the 1950s, the community faced a unique threat. A series of strange animal attacks that struck fear and panic amongst the townspeople and left an enduring mystery in its wake.
The goat was laying down like this, and the tip end of his nose was bit off.
He believed in the Beast of Bladenboro, and it was not a mountain lion or coyotes or anything, but that it was a far larger predator.
I know one fellow here, he's 94 years old, and he was right in the middle of all this, the hunting and all the people coming from all over the country here to kill the beast. It was a scary time for Bladenboro.
It terrorized everybody in Bladenboro, pretty much. I mean, it scared people.
It was a panicked, fearful environment.
That was a clip from the trailer for the documentary film, The Beast of Bladenboro. Check out the link in the show notes for more details on how to watch the full film. Now, the beast is still pretty popular these days. There's still sightings and attacks reported from time to time. History Channel's Monster Quest did a full episode on the cryptid. And they even hold a festival in honor of the beast each fall. And like any good cryptid worth its salt, there's also a song about it.
It happened back in 53, a terrible thing to see. It crushed their skulls and drank their blood, a scary beast indeed. The Beast of Bladenboro, Beast of Bladenboro, Beast of Bladenboro. The Beast of Bladenboro, Beast of Bladenboro, Beast of Bladenboro.
That tune performed by Will Moffitt, and if it's your jam, a link to the full recording can be found in the show notes. The point that I'm getting at here is that in North Carolina, these oversized feline monsters are just part of everyday life. So am I surprised that David saw something he couldn't explain down there? Well, frankly, not one bit. But I do thank you, David, for taking the time to share that entry. Well, folks, that's going to wrap it up for this evening, for the most part. Thank you for joining me here tonight. I hope you enjoyed these creepy submissions just as much as I did. Be sure to stick around until after the intro to learn how you can get more Monsters Among Us for free. Monsters Among Us is written and produced by me, Derek Hayes. Copyright Red Crow Media. Additional support is provided by Sarah Carter Hayes and Delaney Bowers. And all media used in this production is done so under the protection of fair use. Please follow us on social media. We have accounts at Facebook and Instagram. And we're desperate for the attention. And while you're at it, be sure to follow us on YouTube as well. And since you're already on the internet, a rate and review would be a big help as well. Don't forget, you can catch the show on the UnX Network every Saturday night at 11 p.m. Eastern. Just visit the unxnetwork.com to listen. And finally, tonight's score was provided by Iron Cthulhu Apocalypse, Co.AG Music, and Carl Casey at White Bat Audio. Thank you one more time for tuning in this evening. A huge thanks to all of tonight's callers. And I leave you tonight with two brief requests. Please, do all you can to keep it spooky. For God's sake. Have a good night.
Borrego Road to the 15th.
And sign up as a new preferred customer.
Now tonight's secret story is short, simple, and strange. Kyle from Illinois. Welcome to tonight's secret entry slot.
Hi, my name is Kyle. I live in Illinois. When I was in high school, I lived in Missouri, outside the St. Louis area. I was taking a friend home one night after we had dropped off another friend. We drove down this road called Highway P outside of O'Fallon, Missouri, nearby St. Paul. And we had just driven through this weird mist, like it was the thickest fog I had ever seen in my life. I couldn't see the front end of the car. I slowed down to almost a stop, but kept going because I didn't want someone to hit me from behind. And it's pretty foresty area. I guess it's around May, early part of June. It was around the end of the school year. And we get out of the fog, turn the corner through the woods, and it clears up. And then we stop and we kind of talk about it. That was weird. We both agree. And then we obviously both agree, let's go back and see it again. So we turn around and we head back, and it's gone. Completely clear. No mist, no fog, nothing. You can see the stars, you can see everything. It's completely clear. And it was so much fog, like, this area that we were in, the clearing was probably about the size of a football field. Totally full. And this was not even 30 seconds later, and it was just gone. So I don't know what it was. Then I just kind of moved on with my life and forgot about it. But then the other day at work, this is now, you know, 20 years later, we were discussing spooky things, and I mentioned that. And my coworker from New Orleans, he seems convinced that I saw a very, very old vampire in the form of mist. Personally, I don't believe in any of this kind of stuff, but that was a very weird thing. So if you have any explanation for that, I'm all ears. And if I drove through a vampire, be careful where you're driving. Thank you.
You should always be careful when you're driving. But thank you, Kyle, for calling in. Now, living up here in the mountains, fog is a real issue. Some nights you literally can't see 20 feet in front of you. Now, I've driven through some gnarly conditions up here, but I can't say that I've ever driven through a vampire. Although I get where your coworker is coming from, Kyle, vampires have long been rumored to have the ability to turn themselves into some sort of mist to escape dangerous and awkward situations. So the connection is not hard to make, especially since the fog seemed to dissipate, almost as if it were alive itself. But like you, Kyle, the logical part of my brain does not allow me to go too far down that rabbit hole. But if folks around Illinois start showing up drained of blood, with two little holes punched in their neck, I just might be changing my tune. Until that happens, thank you again, Kyle, for taking the time to share your entry. Now, folks, buckle up, because from here on we go beyond. But fear not, you can join us for free simply by visiting patreon.com and searching for Monsters Among Us. Once there, join the $1 level to get ad-free content, or the $5 level to get access to all of the bonus material. And you can do so for free for 7 days. And of course, if you enjoyed all that content, maybe stick around for a month or two. That would be an excellent way to support the show that's brought you so much joy, or perhaps terror, whichever better fits your situation. Join me tonight, where I have an update to the story from Season 17, Episode 4, about a screaming something on a rural train. I also have more New England white creatures, mysterious rain, and a whole lot more found in tonight's Beyond. So visit MonstersAmongUsPodcast.com and click the Patreon tab to learn more. It's in the Beyond that you can hear stories like Alyssa's out of New Hampshire.
Hi, Derek. This is Alyssa. I'm from New Hampshire, and I just heard one of the calls from the children's episode from Raymond. I used to live in Raymond. I had a lot of spooky coincidences there of shadow people following me around, but that's not what I'm calling about today. Today I'm calling about when I spent my time in Danville, New Hampshire. I had moved in with my boyfriend at the time.